Hi, my name is Michael Rosario from Saugerties, and you're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM.
Tune in Saturday, December 12th from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. for the 12-hour broadcast of Christoph Mignone's You. The broadcast features works from Steve Bates, Jen Cutler, Sadie Woods, Augustina Woodgate, Jeff Kolar, Beckard Houdon, Merlin Nova, Eric Lintunen, Andrew Ford, Milo Thesiger Meacham, Anastasia Fragang, Anna Frizz, Dana Gingras, Todd Onyx, Sonia Steffen, and others. Tune in from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. all day at WGXC 90.7 FM and Wave Farm Standing Wave Radio.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Fridman Gallery in New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here.
With reports that a vaccine for COVID-19 was entering New York State this weekend, Columbia County Director of Public Health Jack Mabb on WGXC December 10th explained if it's getting to Columbia County that soon.
No, I don't believe so. I think that we know that Columbia Memorial Health is affiliated with Albany Med. My understanding is that Albany Med has been informed that they're going to get an allotment of 975 of the Pfizer vaccines. That's a minimum order. They're going to get one box. And of course, there's 5,000 workers at Albany Med. So, no, there's not going to be any vaccine in Columbia County this weekend. We also know that in terms of divvying up these first vaccines, that CVS and Walgreens have contracts with the state of New York to vaccinate in nursing homes. And they are in that very first wave. The number one category is now being broken down into A, B, and C. So nursing home residents are part of the 1A, and as are the folks at the hospital, especially the emergency department and intensive care unit. So I don't believe that there'll be any of the vaccine from Albany Med making its way down to Hudson. I think that as the second wave comes out, and that's probably just a little ahead of Christmas, I think Columbia Memorial might see some of that, but it'll go toward vaccinating their staff.
Mabb explained that local frontline healthcare workers will begin receiving the vaccine in a few weeks at the A.B. Shaw Fire Building on Route 23 in Clabrick. Nurses hired by Walgreens and CVS will also begin inoculating nursing home staff and residents at nursing home facilities around that time. It will be several months more, Mabb explained, before the general public begins receiving shots in the arm. Mabb said members of the public are already calling his office demanding their vaccines, but will have to wait. You can go to WGXC Audio Archives to hear the full interview with Mabb about the coming vaccine.
There's beginning to be much evidence locally that a Thanksgiving surge of COVID-19 cases has arrived. Albany County reported new records for new COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations on December 10th. An official said it was likely a result of increased transmission over the Thanksgiving holiday. There were 208 new coronavirus cases announced in Albany County, which now has 98 residents hospitalized. There were also two more deaths in Albany County, bringing the total there to 172 people. Columbia County today reported 21 new COVID-19 cases, and the last 3 days have seen higher totals than recently. Columbia County Health Director Jack Mabb told WGXC December 10th that the increased spread was likely related to Thanksgiving. Greene County officials announced 12 more new coronavirus cases there. There were 62 new cases of COVID-19 confirmed by Rensselaer County Health Department on December 10th. Rensselaer County also announced two more deaths for a total of 67 so far. There were also two more COVID-19-related deaths in Dutchess County, officials announced December 10th. And there were 103 new Ulster County cases, including the first COVID-19 case in the Ulster County Jail, reported on December 10th.
News10.com is reporting 80% of Albany Med Hospital staff said in response to a survey that they will take the COVID-19 vaccine. According to Dr. Ferdinand J. Vendetti, Albany Medical Center Executive Vice President for Systems Care Delivery and Hospital General Director, Vendetti said the hospital will not make the vaccine mandatory, but the survey showed encouraging numbers. He shares their confidence in the vaccine. Vendetti said at a press conference December 10th, and I quote, "I read the 53-page document that the FDA put together about the Pfizer vaccine, and I'm comfortable taking it. I'm comfortable with my wife taking it and my kids taking it," end quote. Hospitals make the decision about which members of their staff will be prioritized based on potential exposure to the virus. The emergency department, for example, is high priority at Albany Med. And you can read more at news10.com.
Natasha Vaughn is reporting for Columbia Green Media that the Columbia County Board of Supervisors unanimously adopted a $154.2 million budget for 2021, reflecting a $5.3 million decrease in spending from 2020. Quote, "I would like to thank all you supervisors for the support in making a lot of the tough decisions we made throughout the year," unquote, Columbia County Board of Supervisors Chair Matt Morrell said. Quote, "And I want to thank our department heads for working with us and cooperating. But most of all, I want to thank all our employees who sacrificed quite a bit for us the last year. We really appreciate the fact that they're working with us to try to get our budget in balance," unquote. A homeowner with a property assessed at just under $255,000 will see a reduction in their county tax of 1.5% for a savings of almost $22 for the year. The $5.3 million reduction in the budget comes from a $3.6 million decline in the general fund and a $1.8 million decrease reflected in county roads and machinery. The spending plan calls for a 1.56% tax levy increase, falling under the state's tax cap of 2% for 2021, Morrell said. The county imposed a hiring freeze of $1.7 million. In addition, the county worked with the unions to reach an agreement calling for no raises for the beginning of 2021, Morrell said. Officials were conservative with their estimates for the 2021 budget due to the uncertainty of the pandemic, said Columbia County Treasurer P.J. Keeler. The spending plan reflects decreases of $1.1 million in sales tax revenue and $3.5 million in state aid, and a decrease to the county's road bond of $528,000 because there is no state snowplowing contract. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Aaliyah Schneider is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The Hudson Common Council is considering a resolution that would reduce the citywide speed limit from 30 miles an hour to 25 miles an hour. The proposed resolution would apply to truck routes within the city limits as well. Residents of Hudson have long complained about vehicles traveling at unsafe speeds. The resolution states the speed is 30 miles an hour, but drivers regularly exceed it, which causes a threat to the community. Fifth Ward Alderman Dominique Morante said recent initiatives to lower the speed limit came from Fifth Ward residents. Constituents in Morante's ward spoke about speeding problems at a town hall meeting about 2 years ago, he said. More than 60 Fifth Ward residents recently signed a petition requesting the reduction, and it was submitted to the council. When asked, City Attorney Jeff Baker said the city could request a 25-mile-an-hour limit be applied to the state truck route. He said, and I quote, "We may not get it," end quote. Baker added, "The city has a case to ask for the change, and the routes are relatively small." He said, and I quote, "It's not an unreasonable request," end quote. Hudson Police Chief L. Edward Moore supports the resolution, although he said speeding is not as much of an issue as people think it is. Moore said, and I quote, "I'm supportive of the 25 miles per hour because everybody knows that slower speeds correlate to less injuries, pedestrian and motor vehicle injuries. I think the average person thinks that cars are speeding with more frequency than actually happens," end quote. The council will vote on the resolution at its December 15th formal meeting, and you can read more at HudsonValley360.com.
Sarah Trafton is reporting for Columbia Green Media that the New York State Correctional Officer and Police Benevolent Association is calling for the lockdown of Green Correctional Facility, citing an increase in contraband as the reason. Security measures at the state prison have been lax during the pandemic, Union Vice President Chris Moreau claimed. In the month of November, 7 cell phones and 17 makeshift weapons were recovered. Guards also found synthetic marijuana, homemade alcohol, and vials of septocaine, a local anesthetic often used in dental procedures. Quote, "With the pandemic, the frisking, the security aspects have become a little more lax as we try to keep distance between staff and inmates," unquote, Moreau said. Quote, "Unfortunately, that comes at the detriment of security. It's become quite apparent the facility is absolutely littered with contraband," unquote. The State Department of Corrections and Community Supervision spokesperson Thomas Bailey said a lockdown is not warranted. He said, quote, "DOC staff, including its canine units, continue to be vigilant in searching for and finding drugs and other contraband and keeping it out of our facilities. The department continues its ongoing review of policies and procedures, as well as its strategic searches when appropriate. When someone is found introducing contraband, we hold them accountable and prosecute them to the fullest extent of the law. At this time, there has been no significant event or trigger to warrant a lockdown of the facility," unquote. The facility ranks second among state correctional facilities for the number of COVID-19 cases in the jail population. Fishkill Correctional Facility has reported 605 cases to date, and Green has reported 162, according to the DOC's website. Green Correctional did not have any active coronavirus cases as of December 8th. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Sean Mulcurran is reporting for the Altamont Enterprise. Father Peter Young, a Catholic priest who changed the way lawmakers and everyday people view addiction and whose work would ultimately help thousands, died on Wednesday, December 9th, at the age of 90. When Young began his work at Albany's South End in the 1950s, addiction, specifically alcoholism, was still a criminalized behavior. He told the Altamont Enterprise many years ago, and I quote, "The biggest thing I did was destigmatize. I destigmatized addiction," end quote. He said in a 2008 interview that when he proved decriminalization was cost-effective, he gained credibility. Young said, and I quote, "That's what enabled people to get help, when they no longer had to admit to being a criminal to attend Alcoholics Anonymous," end quote. In the 1980s, Young set up an honor court program to offer nonviolent offenders who had committed alcohol or drug-related crimes an opportunity to go to drug treatment instead of jail. He would go on to run 121 not-for-profit addiction treatment and rehabilitation programs that treated more than 18,000 people each day. Beyond treatment, he said people needed housing and employment to recover. Public officials and residents of the Capital Region are mourning his passing. New York State Assemblymember Patricia Fahey called his death, and I quote, "heartbreaking news," end quote. She wrote in an Instagram post, and I quote, "Father Young was a legend and one of my true heroes in life. He wrote a book on addiction and taught us all how to treat those with substance abuse disorders as human beings first," end quote. Read more about this story in the Altamont Enterprise.
Monica Ryan and Nexstar Media Wire are reporting that people around the world searched why more than ever this year, according to Google's Year in Search. Many searches for the year were prompted by the coronavirus pandemic, including why is it called COVID-19 and why is toilet paper sold out? People also asked about social justice-related issues, why Black Lives Matter and why does democracy matter, were in Google's top 10 trending searches this year. Election results, coronavirus, Kobe Bryant, coronavirus update, coronavirus symptoms, Zoom, who is winning the election, Naya Rivera, Chadwick Boseman, and PlayStation 5 were in the top 10. Google's top news searches in 2020 were coronavirus election results, Iran, Beirut, Hantavirus, stimulus checks, unemployment, Tesla stock, Bihar election result, and Black Lives Matter. Read more about this story at news10.com.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Friday, mostly sunny with a high near 49 degrees. Friday night, mostly cloudy with a low of around 33. And on Saturday, a chance of showers after 1 p.m., cloudy with a high near 46 degrees. And Saturday night, a chance of showers, cloudy with a low of around 41. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears. In Greene and Columbia counties.
Hello and welcome to the Better Weather for Friday, December 11th. Today starts off just below freezing, 30 degrees on the ground, upper 20s up in the hills. A stiff breeze will be getting in the nooks and crannies today, so bundle up if you go out, even though the temperature will reach 50 degrees by 1 p.m. Cloud cover will be moderate all day. After dark, temperatures fall to the mid-30s. Tomorrow, a small bounce back reaching a high of 45. Rain begins around 10 a.m. and continues through the night. The cloud cover will be keeping temperatures at a moderate 45 degrees. Sunday, rain stops at dawn and temperatures reach 56 degrees. Today's tide schedule is low at 5:59 a.m., high at 11:50 a.m., and low again at 6:36 p.m. Sunset today will be at 4:11 p.m., and sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:11 a.m. Looking way up, we see Earth is entering the debris field of Comet 3200, Phaethon. Source of the annual Geminid meteor shower. Due to peak on Monday. Solar wind speed is currently 487 kilometers per second at 4.5 protons per milliliter. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 11. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Bill Mancini and Bernadette Powis of Kinderhook, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
90.7 FM.
Acre, Hudson, Catskill.
I'm folks. Jeff Friedman is the president and executive director of the Greene County Chamber of Commerce here in New York and has been in this position since 2013. Additionally, Jeff has made it an emphasis of the chamber to assist and bring attention to the services and needs of numerous local not-for-profit community organizations. He currently serves on the board of the Greene County Economic Development Corporation, Congressman Antonio Delgado Small Business Advisory Committee. Jeff, I'm looking at all this. I can't read all this. You are like on every board. You're on everyone's wish list, aren't you?
Unfortunately, yes. Or fortunately, I'm not sure which.
Doesn't your family miss you?
I don't know. I think my wife appreciates the free time.
Well, folks, it's safe to say that Jeff Friedman has a very lengthy record here in our region of serving on different boards, serving the needs of the community. And this year he became a member of the Greene County Police Reform and Reinvention Collaborative in Greene County and in Catskill. What has been the public's response to the formation of this group? Actually, before you answer that, I'd like to read the mission statement of this group. The committee was formed in August in response to a state executive order in June requiring all government entities with a police agency to conduct a review of the police policy and procedures and develop a plan to improve them in a way that will address the needs of the community. So, Jeff, let me ask the question again. What has been the public's response to the formation of this group?
So the public response that we're getting, because we've held, I think we've held four or five meetings at this point. We did have to cancel a meeting the week of Thanksgiving due to COVID concerns. Mm-hmm. But three of those were provided public input. And I think overall it has been positive. We really haven't engaged in other words, we were during these meetings that we held, we were looking for feedback from the public to get their thoughts, to get their comments. You know, obviously some of them are harsh and rightly so, not about the committee necessarily, but just about, you know, finding the ways to create a more inclusive, I guess, if you want to call it a more balanced manner of policing in our community. And so I think in general, it's been positive. You know, there have been some criticisms of the makeup of the committee, but I guess you'll get that when whenever you're doing something like this, there'll always be some criticism along that line. And the committee members have looked at including other folks in the process. So I think it's overall, it's been a positive. I think that some good things can come of this. We're only about halfway through the process. Mm-hmm. You know, and COVID is pitching us a lot of challenges where we've been forced to meet virtually tomorrow night is our next meeting. And we're being forced to meet virtually as a result of, you know, the increase of COVID cases. Mm-hmm. So that'll present a new challenge. We haven't done it that way yet, but we're committed to keeping this moving forward. So, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. Now, I have it that the meeting's tonight, December 9th.
Oh, yes, you are right. I'm
okay.
Sorry.
That's
it is
okay.
Tonight.
So there is a virtual meeting of this committee tonight at 6 p.m., on YouTube. Is that correct? It's on YouTube?
It will be broadcast on YouTube. I haven't, I don't have the exact details. I know there is a way that, or I believe that there is a way that the public will be able to interact with us. I don't have all the details of how that's going to work.
Okay. I think one place people can go is greengovernment.com. So go right to, the Greene County website, and there's probably information there.
There definitely is information there. They can get all the information on how to link and see and get to the meeting from there.
Okay. So let's go back to the previous meeting, which was on November 9th. This was held at the Catskill High School Auditorium. The topic was mental health, domestic violence, and collaboration with the Greene County Sheriff's Office. Can you give us an update of how that meeting went?
Yeah, so the bottom line was the committee wanted to hear from experts in the field because mental health had come up on several occasions in input from the public and whatnot. And there's a concern, obviously resources are stretched across the county. Even before COVID, you know, mental health issues and domestic abuse and substance abuse, all the things that, that police get called for, but not necessarily would be someone you would say is the complete expert on handling the subject. So that was a concern. So we wanted to hear from mental health experts on what was their thought processes and what the situation was and so forth. So we got a lot of good information. There was a lot of input from the public on this particular subject. There was some input that, that, you know, the committee was or just the process in general was being criticized a little bit because they felt like we were focusing too heavily on this particular aspect. But, you know, we tried to remind the people in the audience that was just the theme of this hearing. We've had other hearings with other themes. We actually had held a hearing with every police chief from every police agency in Greene County to find out what other agencies are doing and what their policies and procedures are and what their training is and what their resources were so that we could have a better understanding. Because one thing I want to caution people when they talk to us about the committee that I'm serving on, we are only, our committee is the Greene County committee, mm-hmm. and we are only tasked with reviewing the policies, procedures, and making recommendations for the Greene County Sheriff's Office.
That's good to know.
Yeah. So this whole process was initiated by the New York State Governor's Office. Governor Cuomo mandated that every police agency and every community, every governmental body that has a police agency under its jurisdiction had to form a committee like this, go through and review the policies. There's a if you want to go on the governor's website, or I also believe it's on the Greene County government website. You can see the 130-page document that is our guiding principle on what we're supposed to do with this process that the governor's office has issued. And so we wanted to know what other people were doing and what they were thinking and what they were, because there are, if I remember correctly, there's seven other police agencies in Greene County, not including the New York State Police. So we wanted to hear from them. So we've gone through a lot of different aspects. What we're getting to at this point is we're going to be moving ourselves towards the nitty gritty of deciding exactly, you know, what we're going to do in terms of recommendations and what our final report will look like. So that's something that we're hoping to do throughout the months of December and January, because we have to issue a report by the end of February to the Greene County Legislature, and they have to then accept and adopt it and then hand that to the governor's office before the 1st of April. Mm-hmm. So the time frame is tight, but we're working towards getting it done in what's becoming a more challenging environment to do it.
Yeah. Folks, it's about 13 minutes before 10 o'clock, and you are in tune to WGXC, ACRA, Catskill, Hudson, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. And I'm having a conversation with Jeff Friedman, the president and executive director of the Greene County Chamber of Commerce of New York, as well as being a member of the Greene County Police Reform and Reinvention Collaborative. So, Jeff, as we start to segue into, you know, about local business, I'll ask you one last question in regards to police reform. What have local businesses in Greene County expressed to you about the actions of the police in the community?
So in general, the business community obviously has a positive view of the policing in the community, especially when it comes to the sheriff's office. They're very positive in that regard. You know, there are other individual community members outside the business community who have some issues with policing in general. It's difficult for the committee because one of the things we were trying to do was find out what the complaints were about the sheriff's office. But there are so very few official complaints for us to investigate. The sheriff's office has not had very many complaints or you know, official issues or anybody issuing any real complaints. So that's why we reached out to the public to see if we could get a more public feedback. We obviously know what the issues are nationally, and we know what the issues are in larger municipalities or larger cities and things like that than you would find in Greene County, since we're fairly rural. So, I'm not sure where the committee is going to head with this. I know there are some committee members that would like to, recommend some changes and some new programming. Certainly, one of the reasons we touched on mental health was that happens to be an area where, you know, the deputies are put in a very difficult position when they arrive, and they don't necessarily have the expertise to deal with that kind of thing. And we want to make sure that that doesn't happen. We've talked a lot about community policing, doing a better job of community policing, which our businesses would be very interested in seeing happen. And we have talked about, beyond community policing, more training, more cooperative services between agencies, the possibility of maybe even there has been some discussion, although I don't know if it'll be in our final report, if the committee will decide that's a good recommendation of a citizens review board. Everything's on the table right now. We were in a fact-finding mode, and even tonight's meeting is going to be a little bit of a fact-finding mode. And then, we're going to put all that data together and try to come up with something that we think is a constructive document that makes sure that everyone, feels that there's some equality or to reduce any inequities that might happen in policing in Greene County with the sheriff's office. I want to caution, everything we're doing is for the sheriff's office. The village of Catskill is engaged in this process right now, as is every other municipality in Greene County that has a police agency. In fact, every municipality in all of New York State is engaged in this right now. So,
okay. Let's talk about local businesses, and I'm going to cut right to the chase and ask the question. Is it as simple as shopping local that will keep businesses in business until, say, March or April of next year? And I know right now we're all sitting on pins and needles to seeing if the government is going to, open the silo and let some money flow out to local businesses.
Yeah, so the answer to that, that's a complicated question right now, because we don't know where, COVID is a very fluid situation. Right now, the numbers are trending very badly in the wrong direction. We are, the chamber is begging the general public to be careful, to wear masks, mm-hmm. to social distance, to stay out of public if possible, to avoid large gatherings. Even the gatherings in their home, where they're saying a lot of people are becoming infected because they think they're in a safe circle of friends and that's where they're getting infected. To even think about in your home, if there's somebody in your home, everybody wearing masks at this point, the numbers are scary in the direction they're heading, mm-hmm. even locally.
Yeah.
Greene County's approaching 100 active cases quickly. Columbia County's in the same trajectory. So to answer your question, yeah, it could be as simple as just shop local, shop small. But then again, that holds true even when there is no COVID going
on. Right.
These shops are owned by your neighbors. They're owned by your friends. They employ your friends and neighbors. And they do have wonderful products. I mean, they have amazing stuff. There's especially in in Greene County on our main streets. We've got businesses that just do amazing locally sourced, locally, you know, designed, locally made stuff. And then they, and then the stuff that isn't local, you know, they just find these great products and bring them in. And I think that, you know, you could really do, you could do far worse if you were shopping, you know, not locally. You know, and our businesses are certainly concerned. I mean, let's face it. If numbers get really high, you know, the last thing the governor wants to do at this point is shut things down. It's not politically expedient for him to just keep crashing the economy. Right. So, but you know, we have to do what we have to do. Our hospitals are becoming stressed, and you know, yeah, I mean, both my daughters and my wife all work in healthcare and hospitals in the region, and it's not pretty out there. So we're imploring people to do that. But at the same time, look, if you don't want to go in the stores, call them up, visit their websites. A lot of them will do curbside. A lot of them will do virtual tours. I even know an owner that will, you can call their shop and they'll FaceTime with you and walk through the store. And so there's a lot of innovative stuff happening. Yeah. So yeah, just support our local stores.
Yeah. Well, that's going to lead into my last question. But before we do, at about 6 minutes before the hour, folks, we're getting ready for the top of the hour news here at WGXC. Jeff, if we want to read your lengthy bio and learn more about you in the chamber, what's the website? What's that website?
Well, I don't know if you could see my bio there, but you can go to greencountychamber.com. We have all kinds of resources there. We're constantly updating the information that we're getting from government officials, you know, including because we're constantly talking with Congressman Delgado and Senators Gillibrand and Schumer and with state officials. I have to say that all of our state officials, our government officials, have been amazingly wonderful for small business. They've been working really hard. You know, Assemblyman Tague from the New York State Assembly has been especially, you know, responsive. The governor's office has been responsive. So, you know, go to our website. You can find a lot of information on what's happening. And you can also just find out a lot of information about just business in general and what the chamber's up to. So,
yeah. Yeah. And like I said, you pretty much answered my last question about how businesses are preparing differently for this winter than they have in the past, meaning with less foot traffic. You know, what alternatives have some businesses offered to customers to buy their stuff and utilize their services? And you've pretty much answered that.
Yeah. So a lot of them have developed websites that they really didn't have before. And some of them didn't even have e-commerce before, but now they do. Restaurants have done the same thing. You can now order online at numerous restaurants that you couldn't do before.
Just whip out your phone, get that app. Tick, 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 tick.
Yep. Yeah. There's a bunch of them now that are even purchasing vehicles and are starting to do delivery. The restaurants are prepared for this. They've been expecting this. So I know a majority of the Greene County local restaurants are putting together innovative takeout menus. They include family meals and all kinds of things. So, support those restaurants. They're going to need it to get through this winter. And they're doing things, you know, curbside delivery, delivery to your home, really cool takeout menus. It's going to be a challenge for everybody. I know everybody's getting stir crazy. Look, I certainly have COVID fatigue. I understand it, but we have to do what we have to do to get through this. I can speak from personal experience. My daughter, who's a nurse on the infectious disease unit at Albany Med, just was contracted COVID. They had a bit of an outbreak on her floor amongst the staff. And she really suffered for about 10 days. She was very, very ill. She contracted COVID pneumonia. And, she's healthy again. She's back to work. But this is not a pretty disease. So if you do develop symptoms, it can be very ugly. And we really ask people to be careful. Wow.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Well, Jeff, fast and furiously, we've once again done it, you and I here. But thank you for the valuable information. And, you know, I'll probably talk to you again in the spring as we see how this all develops, waiting for the government to see what they're going to do with, money and support to local businesses. But we've already just said support local businesses in the best and most safe way that you can this holiday season. Yes, Jeffy?
Yeah, absolutely. And we're waiting to see what the federal government does. We're hearing something's going to happen here by the end of this week. So keep your eyes posted to the news. I'm sure that or stay, you know, watch our information that we put out. But we're hopeful there'll be some support for both businesses and folks who are unemployed. And we're even hearing talk of another round of stimulus checks. So,
yeah,
we'll see.
All right, Jeff Friedman, thank you so much for your time. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Yeah, it was good to have you have me. Thank you so much.
It was good to have you. All right, ciao, man. See you later.
Take care. Bye. Bye-bye.
Here's 2020 new music from Fortet. Song's called Baby from the album 16 Oceans.
Baby, all things.
Notary Public, and Chatham resident Michael Holden is a retired engineer. And I believe, Michael, it's been for the last 8 years that you've been working alongside your wife, Laura Holden, of Holden Notary.
Yes, that's correct. She started out being a mobile notary, sometimes called a signing agent. And I used to drive her to her places that she would do it. And she did a few a week. And then when I retired, she said, this would be a good thing for me to do. So it's really fun.
Yeah, she must have liked your work and she hired you.
Yeah, that's it.
You serve Columbia, Greene, Albany, Rensselaer, Saratoga, Ulster, and Dutchess counties in upstate New York, as well as the Berkshires in Massachusetts.
I've been to Schoharie in Delaware as well.
Ah, a man of many talents all over the place. Sweet. So are you in the town of Chatham, the village of Chatham?
Oh, that's a great question. I was so hoping you'd ask. I actually live in Ghent.
Oh.
I live on the cusp, but my post office is Chatham.
Oh, and, gotcha.
Well, you know, the fair is actually in Ghent, not in Chatham. Fairgrounds. So it's a real cusp of going right across everybody.
How long have you? Oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I've been here about 31 years we lived here.
Oh, wow. So for those not familiar with the area, so Ghent is right next to Chatham. So you're about 2.5 hours north of New York City, and you're about 20 miles from Hudson, heading north on Route 66.
That's correct.
Yeah. And let me just give a little backstory of how I met Michael. Michael came to our house because we were refinancing our mortgage, and he came over, and we signed some paperwork, and I offered him some tea. And I found out that his daughters are tea experts, I guess, and they have put you on the path to good tea and not, you know, stuff like, do they still sell Tetley tea in the grocery store? I remember that. My grandmother used to drink that stuff. She also drank Sanka. Ugh.
Oh, my.
Oh, Sanka coffee was the worst.
Ugh. I've never had a cup of coffee.
Oh, really? You don't know what you're missing.
It smells great, but I just can't, you know, it's like trying to eat squash. I can't do that either.
What? Oh, no.
I can eat raw spinach, but not cooked spinach.
Okay. Well, I don't eat raw carrots. They hurt my stomach, but I'll eat cooked carrots.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we're on the same page about stuff.
Well, they say anything you can't eat, you shouldn't eat, by the way.
Okay. Then I won't force myself with those raw carrots.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, Michael, tell us, what does a notary public do?
Well, we're actually professional witnesses. And if you went into a bank or someplace like that, there's usually a notary there. And they would notarize something. But when you have something like we did with you of 150 pages or sometimes more, you need someone who understands what you're signing. We can't give any type of legal advice, but we can come in and go page by page and tell you this is such and such. This is what you're signing. Many of the pages, we're not even supposed to point to anything. If you have a question, we will pick it up and say it's on this page. Because you could accidentally say something like, oh, your due date is this day, and it's not that day. Okay. So you'd be very, very careful of what you do. But our philosophy, we got into this because someone came to our house when we did a refinance. And we started doing it. And one of the things that we noticed is people are very nervous, especially older people. And young people don't know anything. So what we do is we make them feel comfortable of what they're doing. And what's great is I've done these with people who have done 7 of them. I just handed them the paperwork, and I asked them questions.
So you've been doing this for about 8 years. Initially, what was the feeling walking into people's homes?
You've met me, so you know that I'm very not – I'm a very happy guy. So – I would do things like this. I don't double knot my shoes because if I look down and they don't have their shoes on, I take mine off.
And we appreciate that.
I do things like that. And I don't, I just talked to them. We just had to have a good, I spent 2.5 hours at a place just because we were having a good time. I've been to crack dens in Troy and Albany, and let me tell you something. Those are wonderful people. I can't tell you a thing about their lifestyle. I can tell you they treated me wonderfully. Mm-hmm. So and it makes me happy to say that, because you want to be prejudiced against inner city. No. Of the almost 3,000 signings I've done, I have never met anyone who wasn't nice.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And that's about 6,000 people. I mean, that is a lot of people. And, the joking and the fun is, and the tea. Well, the funniest thing is the first time I did this, I'm a retired engineer. So I follow rules. And one of the rules was, don't drink while you're working. Well, being a teetotaler, I thought they meant don't drink anything. So I mentioned to my wife that, yeah, they offered me some water, but I didn't take it. She goes, well, she used the word idiot. I'm not sure she meant it, but she said, no, that's alcohol. I'm like, oh, okay. So that's why I drink tea now and have a good time. And I always get bottles of water. I have my car. I have these three bottles of water in my car at all times from customers. So I have fun.
Yeah. So what's the best treat you've been offered?
Oh, my. I went to a guy's house in the city. I walked in, and the Beatles were playing on whatever he had. I don't know if it was a record or something, but it was jazz. Somebody was playing Beatles. It was a jazz album playing the Beatles, and I love the Beatles. And he had a guitar collection, and he was a cook, and he had stuff cooking. It was I do believe ribs and stuff, and some kind of potatoes, and we just chowed down. It was really wonderful. And he asked, he told us we should come back with the wife and stuff like that. So that was fun.
The fringe benefits of the job.
Oh, also, I do very, very rich people. When I say very rich, I mean somebody in charge of $56 million of property. I did the director of Frozen on Broadway. I went to his house, and I can't talk too much about it. It's all private.
Of course.
But super nice, super rich. They have a dog named Holden. That's my last name. that was really great. But I got $100 tip several times. And I know in New York City, I guess notaries get tips. Up here, it's rare, but oh my goodness. The first thing I did was over tip when I bought a pizza that night. I gave a $20 tip.
Paying it forward, yeah.
That's right. So anyway, it's fun. I have a ball doing it. I look forward to it. Don't like driving at night too much, but with everybody refinancing, we have a lot of business, and it's fun.
Wow. And I'm assuming this has probably been a boon year for you.
Yes, and I can't talk too much about it because my wife doesn't want me talking about the details.
No,
but it's been great.
Very much understood. Cool. So during this time of year, you and your family have had an outdoor display and open house?
We started back when we rented various places, and finally we ended up here 31 years ago. And my wife picks out a house by how well it can be decorated. And she was doing all the decorating. She would go out through the fence and being a retired electrical engineer, I was pulling cables into the house through the windows. And every time you turn on a fan, the circuit would blow. So we had three outdoor circuits put in. And at one point we actually counted how many lights that we had put up, and 40,000. We had 40,000 plus lights one Christmas. Now, we don't count them anymore because now that we're older, I'm 67 years old, and it was great when I was in my 30s and I could climb up on the roof and put things up there and stuff, but I don't really care to climb ladders anymore. So everything started coming down. And we actually bought, Christmas trees, artificial trees, mm-hmm. that, the day after Christmas, you can get them for $9. And you come in, and we would put those out in the yard. We had 11 of them all decorated in the yard. My wife planted pine trees. They're all grown up and gone now. That's how long we've been here. And years ago, she built a sleigh 8 feet long, beautiful thing. In fact, I'm looking out the window at it right now. And about 5 or 6 years ago, I made nine reindeer, including Rudolph. And the thing is about 30, 35 feet long. And at first I had it on on the ground, but we put it up in cables the last 3 years, and it flies in the air, and it's got lights on it, and that's pretty cool. And we put up a nativity scene a couple of years ago, and we've got that in front of the house this year. And that was kind of fun. Can I tell a story about the nativity scene? I don't want to talk too much. When I put lights on it, I had no idea. It's 17 figures, and they're all bigger than I am. They're full size. It took me all summer to make it. My wife painted it. And I put spotlights on every single figure, and it didn't look right. And I don't know anything about lighting. Sure enough, a huge wind came through that night, knocked over half the lights. It was perfect. The lights shined on the ground instead of on the things. And that's how I kind of learned a little bit about lighting. That's cool.
That is very cool. So this year it's not happening, as you know, not such a big deal this year for you.
For two reasons. One is nobody wants to come into the house, and it's just too scary for everybody. So we're not really decorating as heavy inside. Now, when we talk about the outside, we had 36 Christmas trees in our house last year inside. Now, we start off with the Charlie Brown tree. We count that as a Christmas tree. And we go up from there. But any tree that's lit, we counted. And we counted the ones on the deck as well. And we had 36. We had at least 7 full-size trees. And everything comes off the wall. Everything comes off the shelves. And Christmas goes up. Doorknobs, you name it. Every room. Bathrooms, the shower curtains, you name it. And it was great. This year, though, we have a 15-month-old baby roaming around.
No.
So everything is up.
Got a baby-proof that house.
Yes. So my daughter's with us. Her husband got deployed to Korea, and she is has a 15-month-old, and she's going to deliver a baby at the end of this month, around Christmas time.
Woo-hoo.
So we're having a good time. What's great about my daughter, she cleans all the time. That's great.
Earning her keep. What a woman.
She always has. Yeah. It's great. Yeah. So we're having a lot of fun. And I'm the guy who gets up early because I'm an early riser anyway. This morning I got up at 4. Oh, it was the 4, 3rd, quarter to 5. Because the baby.
Yes, sir. It's your boy, Big Vern. You're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM and WGXC.org. You heard?
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable. All the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Stephen Bull of Greenport, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast, December the 11th, 2020. I'm Mike Clifford. COVID-19 has been a major challenge to America's food supply chain, but a New Mexico researcher says it's proven resilient despite unknowns and panic buying.
Initial stay-at-home orders led to stockpiling, empty grocery store shelves, and demand that far exceeded supply. Jay Lillywhite, an ag economist at New Mexico State University, says various laws governing food labeling, packaging, and sizing meant manufacturers and distributors were logistically paralyzed at the outset of the pandemic, which made consumers fearful there wouldn't be enough food.
There is plenty of food there. The system is not broke. It stretched. It had to modify, but it did not break. There's plenty of food out there. Farmers are still farming.
I'm Roz Brown.
Food processing plants turned out to be a major weakness in the supply chain since many are highly dependent on labor and saw their output disrupted due to infection rates among workers. And efforts to reach a year-end agreement on a stimulus package to prop up the shuttering economy faltered Thursday. The New York Times reports that comes as aides to Senator Mitch McConnell, the majority leader, signaled privately that most Republicans were unlikely to endorse an emerging bipartisan compromise. The Times adds that McConnell's advisors expressed concerns that Republicans could not accept liability protections for business that they consider too limited, or funding for state and local governments that they have long resisted. Both are central elements of a $908 billion outline draft by moderates in both parties. A leading group advocating for seniors has a new report about COVID cases in South Dakota nursing homes, and the findings paint a troubling picture as providers try to keep residents safe.
The latest COVID-19 dashboard from AARP says South Dakota is well above the national rate for recent case numbers and death averages. Between mid-October and mid-November, the state saw 22 new COVID-19 cases per 100 long-term care residents, up from 5.5 in the previous four-week period. AARP State Director Eric Ikowski says staff members becoming infected is a big concern, too.
Across the country, but also here in South Dakota, and we're just calling upon our leaders in the state to do as much as possible to protect our most vulnerable South Dakotans.
Ikowski says that should include doubling up on efforts to add staff and protective gear as the virus re-enters many facilities from community spread. AARP is providing these monthly snapshots using self-reporting data nursing homes send to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
The report says 77% of nursing homes were without a one-week supply of PPE, up from 23% in the last reporting period. This is PMS. Latino students are entering college in record numbers, but that doesn't necessarily mean they are ending up getting degrees.
Unidos U.S. and the University of North Carolina researched the reasons why some Latino students don't finish college and finds they're more averse to debt than their non-Latino peers. Mirna Lorele Cibrian is the Latino Partnership Program Officer for the Oregon Community Foundation. She says many Latinos are first-generation students and don't know how they'll be able to afford school.
For me, when I thought about higher education and going to school, I looked at the overall amount that it was going to cost, right? Like, what was the total bill? And I said to myself, I remember, oh, I can't do that.
Cibrian says there is a need for more mentors on higher education in Latino communities. Data from Excelencia in Education finds a large gap in degree attainment in Oregon. 22% of Latino Oregonians aged 25 or older had an associate degree or higher, compared with 45% of white Oregonians.
More than half of Indiana's land is used for agriculture, and there's a new effort to keep those lands resilient to the effects of climate change.
The Food and Agriculture Climate Alliance is promoting tools and incentives that can help farmers tackle the warming climate head-on. And Jessica D'Ambrosio with the Nature Conservancy in Ohio says the group wants farmers in the ag industry to become partners in finding solutions.
And really changing the conversation from you can either have this or that to more of that and. So we can work together on these issues and we can both have mutually beneficial outcomes.
And the Alliance is promoting federal policies that focus on soil health, livestock and dairy, and forest. D'Ambrosio says they're encouraging and supporting farmers and ranchers who transition to climate-smart practices and offering incentives to increase on-farm renewable energy and reduce energy consumption. Mary Sherman reporting.
Finally, our Nadia Ramlagan tells us about a new report. It says women ages 35 to 44 in Appalachia are dying of drug overdose, suicide, and alcohol liver disease at rates 69% higher than women in the rest of the nation.
The Appalachian Regional Commission report on so-called diseases of despair is based on CDC data from 2018. But researchers say financial, childcare, and mental health struggles due to the pandemic will likely worsen the situation. Wendy Wasserman of the commission staff says this public health crisis is closely tied to economic development.
Prime working age, that by definition impacts economic potential.
In Kentucky, these mortality rates were 21% higher overall than in non-Appalachian states. This is Mike Clifford. Thank you for wrapping up your week with Public News Service. Member and listener supported. Heard on great radio stations all across the nation and online at publicnewsservice.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Diane Walden is reporting for the Columbia paper. Brenda Adams, the CEO and executive director of Columbia County Habitat for Humanity, has announced her retirement from the post she has held for nearly 13 years. Habitat, a nonprofit housing organization, was founded in 1993, and I quote, to make safe, decent, affordable ownership available to working families, end quote. Adams said in a conversation with the Columbia paper this week, and I quote, Habitat will always be dear to my heart. I could stay there forever. You'll never find a more inspiring, committed, compassionate, or engaged group of people, end quote. During Adams' tenure, Habitat built the first affordable passive housing in New York, launched a restore operation which contributes $100,000 yearly to construction operations, and expanded Habitat's build and rehab activity to a total of 27 completed houses. Adam identified Habitat's partnership with the Barless Wedlick architectural firm as a significant transformational step for the organization. She said the firm, beginning in 2013, and I quote, provided leadership, support, and introduced Habitat to passive house building, end quote. The pandemic initially caused Habitat project progress this year to stop and before it restarted at a slower pace. Adams said a search is currently underway for families interested in owning two finished Habitat homes in Ancrumdale. A family has been identified for the completed rehabilitation of a home in Valencia. That sale is expected to take place in the next few weeks. Beginning in late spring or early summer next year, Habitat will turn its attention to a project in Philmont. Habitat Board President Chris Kirsten has formed a search committee. Efforts to identify a new executive director and CEO will begin immediately. Adams plans to stay on until the new director is found. And you can read the full story in the Columbia paper. Leah Schneider is reporting for Columbia Green Media. Hudson Mayor Kamal Johnson has reversed his decision to forego December free parking after hearing from the community. The reversal was posted December 10th on his Facebook page. The announcement is nowhere to be found on the city website. Johnson wrote, and I quote, starting Monday, December 14th, I will be honoring the tradition of suspending parking meters for the remainder of the month of December. While our city continues to feel the damage of COVID-19, sometimes we will not be able to honor every tradition. However, as your mayor, I do promise to always listen and make decisions I feel are best for the survival of our city. I apologize for the inconvenience caused and wish everyone a healthy and happy holidays, end quote. Johnson acknowledged that local businesses reached out to him about the issue. He said, and I quote, when the community is all over the same page, I need to be on that page, end quote. Editors note, Johnson is a WGXE volunteer on-air programmer, and you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker this week announced all communities will be required to roll back to step one of phase three of the Commonwealth's reopening plan, effective Sunday, December 13th. The decision was made in response to an increase in new COVID-19 infections and hospitalizations since the Thanksgiving holiday that is straining the healthcare system. The new measures are designed to prevent infection and viral spread, especially in indoor settings, to create stronger mask compliance, more social distancing, and limits to the time spent with people outside the household. The plan includes the following restrictions. Outdoor gatherings at event venues will be limited to no more than 50 people. Indoor theaters and performance venues and higher contact indoor recreation businesses will be required to close to the public. Capacity will be reduced from 50% to 40% for gyms, libraries, museums, retail, places of worship, and movie theaters. Specific guidelines are also in place for restaurants and other venues with seated dining, limiting the number of patrons at a table, prohibiting musical performances, and closing food court seating. Read more about this story at mass.gov/news. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, or COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
Hello and welcome to the Better Weather for Friday, December 11th. Today starts off just below freezing, 30 degrees on the ground, upper 20s up in the hills. A stiff breeze will be getting in the nooks and crannies today, so bundle up if you go out, even though the temperature will reach 50 degrees by 1 p.m. Cloud cover will be moderate all day. After dark, temperatures fall to the mid-30s. Tomorrow, a small bounce back, reaching a high of 45. Rain begins around 10 a.m. and continues through the night. The cloud cover will be keeping temperatures at a moderate 45 degrees. Sunday, rain stops at dawn and temperatures reach 56 degrees. Today's tide schedule is low at 5:59 a.m., high at 11:50 a.m., and low again at 6:36 p.m. Sunset today will be at 4:11 p.m., and sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:11 a.m. Looking way up, we see Earth is entering the debris field of Comet 3200, Phaethon, source of the annual Geminid meteor shower, due to peak on Monday. Solar wind speed is currently 487 kilometers per second at 4.5 protons per milliliter. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 11, and this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
You are listening to Transmission Arts Programming on WGXC 90.7 FM.
On the phone, we've got Jack Mabb, the Columbia County Director of Public Health, to update us about the COVID-19 pandemic and what's going on locally, and vaccines coming hopefully very soon. Jack, how are you doing today?
Well, I could live without the virus, but I'm not doing so bad. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on and telling folks about what's going on. So you want to give us a general overview of what the most important things you want the public to know right now?
Well, I think that I always start with the numbers on the day. We had 14 positives today. We've been running, I think yesterday we had 15. Day before it was 22, which is our single day high that we've had here. So we are definitely in the surge on top of the surge that Dr. Fauci has mentioned. I think that listening to some of the stories as my nurses do the contact tracing, I think we're also getting Thanksgiving bubble. We've had a couple of definite clusters coming out of Thanksgiving. We're on the verge of, on Tuesday, of testing for the first time our site at A.B. Shaw Claverick, a fire company in Claverick, where we're going to do vaccinations. We want to test that site. We have a COVID testing going on that day. We're up to 88 people registered. The more people, the better. So I'd love to get more people registered. And if you're interested in getting tested, you can go on our website and sign up for that. We are going to close the registration as of tomorrow.
And what is the times and the dates for that testing?
Well, yeah, that's Tuesday, the 15th, and it's going to be from 9 to 11.
And you need to call to get a registration, or you?
Yeah, you have to be registered so we can get the paperwork cleared up and done with, and just had some control over the numbers too. And but basically, it's a drive up. People are going to be able to drive into the firehouse. This is why we picked this particular firehouse, so that we anticipate doing some pods with the vaccine when it comes. So we want to be inside as best we can for the winter months. So I think it is important that we test it. And again, if people want to be tested, it's the time to do it.
And that's the new firehouse, right? The old firehouse is the library now. Is that right? And
yeah, that's exactly right. The new firehouse.
Yeah, it did look like, first I wanted to say, it looks like all the maps I look at, of the Hudson Valley, there's, you know, Ulster County is darkened in, Dutchess County is darkened in, Rensselaer County is darkened in, Albany County is darkened in, and Greene and Columbia counties have consistently been, seem like less, cases than, the other counties surrounding it. Is that true, or am I hallucinating?
No, you're not. You're not hallucinating. And I watched the numbers in Albany with awe that they're able to even handle any of it. They had 180 cases yesterday. We had 14. They've consistently been over 150 all week long. They're really getting hit pretty heavy. And I think it does go back to, and I've said it plenty of times before, I think we have a good record here of wearing masks and thinking about our events that we're having, social distancing. And it also is part and parcel of rural counties. If you look at, if you get north of Albany and look at some of the rural counties up above Albany, Warren and Montgomery and whatever, you'll see that that they're not quite as they're in the same shape we're in. We have a surge, but it's not anywhere near what Dutchess and Albany are going through.
I just am kind of shocked about we're rural, but we're surrounded by these counties with much more higher rates of everything, and the virus does not respect any borders at all. So I'm just kind of shocked that there's not more people driving into Ravenna or Nassau or Rhinebeck and bringing it back or crossing both ways.
Well, I think too, you have in Albany, you have the SUNY Albany site that is pretty much open most of the week, where people can have, I mean, they do wait when they go up, but they have really ready access to testing. And so, as it has been said all along, the more you test, the more you're going to find. We have been able to test everybody who wants to show up at one of our clinics. There was a few instances where we turned people away. The latest wrinkle for us is that we now have antigen kits, which are easier and it's not as invasive a swab. And we have a plentiful supply. So the last couple of clinics that we held at John L., we didn't turn anybody away. We were able to get them tested. So I think we're keeping up with the desire to be tested. There are people who want to be tested today, and it just doesn't happen that way for us. We have maintained our relationship with Columbia Memorial Health, where we send folks who are symptomatic and who we appear to have been exposed to a positive. We can send them most days to Valencia Rapid Care to get tested. But those spots are reserved for people who are symptomatic and who've been exposed. And so I do think we're keeping up with the desire to be tested. But I think in Albany, the testing site up there, especially SUNY Albany, just makes it so much more accessible.
And then you mentioned, this is what I was thinking too, is it looks like about 2 days ago the Thanksgiving surge started, because you had fairly low numbers, and then 2 or 3 days ago they started kicking up, and you said that record high was 2 days ago, right?
Yep, yeah, the 22. And again, I sit back and listen to the stories that are being that my nurses are getting over the phone, and we had one family that had 22 people at dinner. They came from all over the place. And we had another family that had 14. Again, family and relatives that come in from outside. And both of those cases, we ended up with positives out of the dinner.
And you're still having trouble. Are you still having trouble with folks not telling you where they've been or who they've been talking to?
That's a huge problem. And it's a huge problem for every county out there, and it's one of the laments that I hear when I get on my calls with my fellow directors, is that not only are people not forthcoming with information, they're also rude. They hang up on my folks. They swear at our nurses, and it's just not a great job some days for those folks back there. I understand it. We understand it from a psychological point of view. People don't want to be isolated. They don't want to be quarantined. They don't want to put their friends and family members in the same situation. But all it does is help spread the virus, because these folks are moving around positive and moving around the community if they're not cooperating.
Yeah, it boggles the mind. I mean, I know we're all stressed out and have COVID brain, but the folks that are working for you are just trying to help people survive and not die in a hospital bed with an incubator, right? I mean, it just boggles the mind that you can't be nice to somebody who's just trying to help general public health.
Well, I would say too that generally speaking, the ones who are most resistant are younger people, and they don't seem to have received the message that maybe we're not worried about you so much because you got a healthy immune system, but maybe we're worried about your mom or worried about your aunt that, you know, whatever, your neighbor that you have interactions with. And they just don't seem to get that. And I will tell you, I was nervous about Thanksgiving, and we are seeing some surge in cases, but I've kind of shifted my worries, my 2 o'clock in the morning worries over to New Year's, because this is a holiday where people like to go out and they like to party. And I think what we're going to see is there won't be many bars open, many venues open, but I see a lot of young folks going to house parties. And I see a bigger surge from New Year's than I do from Christmas and the one we're getting from Thanksgiving.
And that's because it's driven by younger people who are more reckless? Is that New Year's Eve sounds, I mean, that describes New Year's Eve better than Thanksgiving generally, right?
Yeah. And I think, I think it's those folks that, we're hearing from other areas that since the bars are closing down at 10 o'clock in many areas in New York, a lot of these younger people are doing house parties. And that's just that's the stage for New Year's Eve, which is going to be, it's going to be a disaster. There's going to be some big parties out there. There's going to be, it doesn't have to be a big party, 10, 15 people all crowded into a house. It's a perfect way to spread the virus.
And then there's been some local spread. I guess there's a story yesterday about a local business in Columbia County that you guys won't. I mean, I've been reading out the names of businesses where there's been coronavirus outbreaks as warnings to people that if you were at this place at this time, you should call the health department. I've been reading those warnings for 9 months, and then Columbia County Board of Supervisors is not going to announce the name of this business that has 3 locations in Columbia County or something like that. And has forced 100 people to quarantine?
Yeah, I guess that's, I can't really say anything. Yes, that's the case. I think there were cases in the past at businesses in the county where I really felt that we should have released the name. I think in this particular case, I feel we should have released the name because what happened in that business was a flagrant disregard for wearing masks and social distancing. And 3/4 of his staff are positive, and it extends out into his family, and including an infant grandson. And I really felt that personally, we should have released the name. It was decided not to. And again, some of the other cases in the past, other businesses, now that it's long past, we had a single manager or assistant manager or something at Walmart who was positive about 3 months ago, and it was decided that we wouldn't say it was Walmart. Well, by the end of the day, and again, we only had one positive person. By the end of the day, Facebook had it. It was 19, and the Columbia County Health Department isn't revealing that it's widespread in the store and whatever. I think in that particular case, it would have been better for us to have been to release the information and just basically said it's one individual who didn't have any real interaction with customers, was just in the management portion of it. So I think that when I look back over the 6 or 7 businesses that have had significant spikes, I think that there were some instances where the public wasn't necessarily in danger and there seemed to be value and not necessarily passing it on. In this particular case with this particular business, the public really wasn't in danger. They're, you know, they had set up things so that people could drop paperwork off on the outside of the business in a mailbox and pick up paperwork that was left for them and whatever. And there really wasn't. And as we said in the article, and I think people read that we don't release the name, but they don't read that we say there's no danger to the public here. And so I always get these calls, and I've got the emails telling me that I'm, you know, well, some very colorful language sometimes, but you know, there's no danger to the public as in this instance. Again, for me, it was a flagrant disregard for mask wearing and social distancing, and I think we could have released the name, but that was not my decision.
Yeah, I'd say it's a flagrant disregard in government transparency, and that it would be easily foilable. That they can't hide this information from us. They can delay the information from the public, but and I would also wonder. I mean, like you said, it feeds into conspiracy theories, and we've already seen that governments telling people the wrong thing or something like you don't need to wear a mask early on because there's a shortage of masks, and we don't want everyone to wear masks. That, you know, that has come back to bite everybody later, don't you think?
Yeah, well, that was certainly true, and it was probably one of the biggest mistakes of Dr. Fauci. One of the fewest. I mean, I think he's a good authority, and I think he speaks well to the whole overall pandemic. But I think it was a mistake on his part to say that the public doesn't need masks. And we try to be here again. I think as far as the numbers go, we try to be as transparent as we can. You know, there has been a relaxation of HIPAA requirements because of the pandemic, but HIPAA doesn't go away, and so there is. You know, there still is a need to protect individuals and whatever, but I think that there is also, like you say, a need for transparency and a need for the public to know. And I try to give as much information as I can. And we did reassure people in our release that there was no danger to the public in this instance.
And the science is also shifting all the time, so you're learning more, so you're telling the public slightly different things. But that's also fed into conspiracy theories too, because you're telling people something once and then science learns something and then you're telling people something different too. That's very true
and frustrating. I'm glad we've learned more about the virus and the effects and the side effects and the way it's transmitted and all, but again, it can lead some people to think that we don't, when it comes to the virus, we don't know what we're doing. We know a lot more what we're doing now than we did at the beginning, but it is constantly shifting, and that's unfortunate.
I don't understand. I mean, the schools continue to do so well here locally that, I don't understand, because they have indoor dining. that's what blows my mind, that health officials keep saying schools.
I have a seventh grader in Hudson, and they dine in their classroom. They don't go to a cafeteria. And so the schools don't have the kids coming in from all the classrooms into the cafeterias. They're pretty much eating.